WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Much of America today is preoccupied with mulling over what President Clinton said last night in his brief address to the nation. We called political satirist Harry Shearer early this morning. He creates political satires for his public radio program, The Show, and for All Things Considered, and he does the voices for many of the characters on The Simpsons. I asked Harry about his reaction to the president's talk last night.
I think I was not the only person surprised at the complete absence of lip bites. But that symbolized the fact that he didn't do what was expected and try to pull emotional strings. And I'm talking about the performance as opposed to the content. Is there content these days? But I was surprised that it was a much angrier or combative apology. It reminded me of, and I guess I'm not sorry to say this, but like if you want a 5-year-old boy to apologize, and he might pout while saying the words.
Last night, President Clinton referred to his deposition in January about Monica Lewinsky, and he said, "While my answers were legally accurate, I did not volunteer information." Well, regarding the legally accurate, I'm sure you've been reading the latest legal definitions of sex, and I wonder what that's been making you think about.
It's been making me think about why Americans hate lawyers. That was the one sentence in the speech that, aside from attacking Ken Starr, if he had it to do over again, he might not have done. All the speculation about whether he'd take refuge in the definition one that was handed to him in the Paula Jones case revolved around what you might call smart lawyering. But if there's anything Americans hate more than politicians, it's lawyers. And I thought the one thing that the president couldn't be seen to do in a public apology was to come on like a lawyer. So it just... seemed to me that was skirting the danger zone there. You should pardon the expression. You should pardon all these expressions. Let's just, a blanket disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen, pardon every expression that's used in this interview.
You've been pretty obsessed with this story. Tell me why.
It's a good story, and the media have done their usual job of excess on it, both of which I think are fascinating things to watch. It's also, I think, a sign of... How well off things are generally in the country that we can sort of take a mental vacation like this. And in many ways, it reminds me of the O.J. spectacle. I mean, these are fin de siècle spectacles, if I may wax pretentious, you know. And we have the luxury of, in both cases, telling the pollsters we're not interested and then turning and consuming every tidbit of it. And I plead guilty to the latter, but not the former. I don't make any excuses about it. It does involve the President of the United States. It does involve a smart man acting apparently in an exceedingly dumb manner, which I find fascinating. The idea that this guy who knew he had implacable foes, perhaps the most implacable since Richard Nixon set foot in the White House, would take a step that reeks of vast carelessness when this woman apparently was coming at him with groupie vibes from 3,000 miles away, makes you think that maybe the Rhodes Scholarship people should take their money back from him. I find that in a character way, in the study of human character, really fascinating. There is, of course, that element that I think makes everybody's ears perk up, which is, what the hell is this marriage really about? I hear stories. I think a lot of people have heard stories. It's the stuff of gossip on a national level. You know, the first marriage is a subject of some debate. And then there is the fact that once again we're watching the public discourse or the rules that govern public discourse be rewritten. It's in a childish way, it's fun to see anchormen say semen.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to watch oral sex be a part of the evening news.
Yeah, it's fun to watch their expressions. You know, they if you get them alone, they'll always make the same speech. You know, this isn't what I got into this business to talk about. And yet, you know, I think the weight and the amount of the coverage has been dictated not by not so much by the adolescent state of the mindset of the Washington Press Corps, which I think is partly true, but just I think has been driven by the fact that although they couldn't say it on the air from the very first moment, everybody in Washington knew that this guy was guilty of this, and that's the dominant feeling that dictated the nature and the extent of the coverage.
You know, it's interesting. Some of the central OJ figures are now pundits on the Monica Lewinsky story. You know,
here's Effie Bailey back again.
Marsha Clark is often anchoring a show. Johnny Cochran has been weighing in. Does it seem odd to you that the central characters from the OJ story are now the pundits for the Monica Lewinsky story?
Well, on my radio show, to make an unseemly self-reference, I had...
oh, it's so unlike you.
I had OJ call Clinton from the golf course to give him some advice, so it doesn't surprise me at all. I think it's gone farther than we know. I think in the 90s, if I had to sum up my feeling about America, everything's OJ.
Do you think when the Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton story is over that Kenneth Starr will end up having his own show?
Yeah, on the Christian Broadcasting Network. I think he'll... you know, do summer relief at the old-time gospel hour when Jerry Falwell goes on vacation. You know, this one of the things that's interesting about this drama, or as we call it in Hollywood, this dramedy, is that sometimes people get the enemies they deserve. And Bill Clinton, this rambunctious libertine, has, you know, ended up fighting a pitched battle with a prig. And it's pretty classic in that way.
Back in the O.J. era, Geraldo used to call his show the O.J. Show of Record.
Yes, he did.
Which program do you think is the Monica Lewinsky Show of Record?
Well, the fact is, of course, the media landscape has changed since then, and I don't think we have shows of record anymore. I think we have networks of record now, you know, and I think MSNBC tries to make every... lurid big story its own by just smearing it throughout the program schedule. So I think in some ways we've gone beyond programs. We have to take it in larger chunks than that these days. But, you know, Terry, it's in some ways I think this, and not to excuse Bill Clinton's behavior, because I think, as I say, if stupidity were grounds for impeachment, I think he'd be out of office tomorrow because it just was remarkably stupid. But in some ways, yes, there's a direct line from Gary Hart on the monkey business to this incident. But I think in the old days, American politicians used to be vetted by their peers before they were allowed to run for high office. And guys who had egregious personal problems were more often than not weeded out by their seniors, who thought, well, he's a nice young chap, but we really can't have this. And they'd pat him on the head and give him some safe office to occupy. And our generation, the baby boom generation, dispensed with the political party system in large part because we were fed up with it. It was unresponsive to us. And we were also very sick and tired of the old boy network that protected things like President Kennedy sleeping with an East German spy and a mafia princess in the White House. And we wanted openness in our system. Well, we got openness.
My guest is political satirist Harry Shearer. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with political satirist Harry Shearer. We're talking about the president's brief address last night and the media coverage of the Clinton-Lewinsky story. Well, Democrats and Republicans seem to be saying now this story has gone on too long. It's time to wrap it up. It's time for Kenneth Starr to wrap it up so we can get on with the business of America. As a satirist, do you think the story has gone on too long? And will you be sorry to see it end?
Of course, and it hasn't gone on. By which, when both Democrats and Republicans say that, of course, the truth is it hasn't gone on nearly long enough. You know, we've heard this litany for a while now that we need to get on with the business of the country and what we've elected this guy to do. And as I was implying earlier with my what I was saying about the changes we made in the electoral system, in some very real way, this is what we elected this guy to do. I think he's done a fine job of this. You know, we elected him to give us this show. We sort of knew who he was. And he's given us what we wanted.
Is that how you feel, that you knew, you expected this to happen?
Well, I mean, everybody knew that Bill Clinton was, as they say in the South, a tough dog to keep on the porch. And obviously, I think that you expect a man of his intelligence to know that the rules have changed since Kennedy, and that maybe once he gets into the White House, maybe he should restrain himself and try to put the reins on his character. But when it comes out as before, you know, surprise isn't one of the real emotions you're entitled to. The Republicans who went around saying character counts, I think, are entitled to a little round of I told you so's at this point.
Has anyone gotten angry with you for your satires about the president and the president's sex life, feeling that you've gone too far, that this isn't a laughing matter?
The question itself was a laughing matter. No, interestingly, I got a lot more of that about making fun of the OJ situation than about this. Now, you can sort of understand that in one of two ways. One, of course, is the obvious, that the O.J. situation was a matter of life and death. Two people were murdered, and I never made fun of the murders, but still people can sort of hang on to that and think that the entire spectacle becomes unseemly for satire. The other is that public radio listeners felt that O.J. was beneath them, but that this is not.
You mean that this story was beneath them?
No, that this story was not beneath them because it involves the President of the United States. Tabloid though the story be, but that the O.J. story involving just, you know, celebrities and the demi-monde of Brentwood and Orange County did not rise to the level of public radio importance.
So what do you think the next big story is going to be?
I think in the middle of O.J. we couldn't have predicted this. Well, I do think that the real open question is whether this makes every politician's private life in excruciating detail a public matter, or whether this marks the end of that chapter. And I do think that's an open question. You know, if everybody's public life is an open book, a private life is an open book at this point, then we are going to have a new class of political leaders. We're going to, for the first time, have under testosterone men running for office, as opposed to the over testosterone guys who occupy positions of power now. And that'll be an interesting experience. It probably means Al Gore will be our next president. But if everybody's private life is an open book, you know, it's just going to get incredibly lurid, knowing what one thinks one knows about some of the possible candidates for the year 2000.
Harry, in summer movies, you've played crude newscasters twice, in King Kong and in The Truman Show.
In Godzilla.
I mean Godzilla. I'm sorry.
That's
I was just
right.
Watching King Kong the other night on television.
They're both big.
Yeah, they're both big. That's right. So I'm wondering if you're like the person of choice who comes to mind when any casting director thinks, crude newscaster, get Harry.
Well, it would be nice if that were true, yeah. But in an upcoming picture about a comedy about Watergate, I play G. Gordon Liddy. So
do you really?
Yes.
What movie is it?
Huh?
What movie is it?
It's called Dick. It's a comedy about Watergate. It's coming out next year. So I guess if I'm thinking of typecasting, I guess if casting directors are thinking of convicted felons turned radio talk show hosts, they would think of me as well.
Exactly. I mean, there's somebody else who was a central character in a scandal and who's now a pundit.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, we do have this radio talk shows are, of course, the last refuge of the convicted felon, because both Oliver North and G. Gordon Liddy have made their latter-day fame having made that transition. You know, I think that's the most interesting thing about modern America, and a show that I'm, as we speak, doing a pilot of for HBO, really takes that as its central premise, that this slipperiness of identity between notoriety and fame and politics and journalism and media and celebrity and notoriety and all of that just sort of has smushed into one thing. And in some way, we're unable to remember now, you know, who became famous for doing something good and who became famous for doing something evil. It doesn't make any difference anymore. You know, Susan Molinari became famous for making a speech and talking about her baby, and G. Gordon Liddy became famous for masterminding a burglary, and here they are both on the air now. Well, except she's not anymore. But, you know, so what difference does it make?
When is this HBO show going to be on?
I think it's just a pilot at this point, and I don't think it's going to be aired because it's very topical, you know, it's just for them to see whether they want to commission the series. But if the series happens, it would happen, I would hope, soon, but probably around the first of the year.
Well, I hope it does happen.
Me too. It's a very new form of animation that allows me to play most of the characters and produce it very close to the time that you see it. So it's very exciting.
That sounds great. Well, Harry, thanks a lot for talking with us.
My pleasure, Terry.
Harry Shearer is the host of the public radio program Le Show. You can also hear his political satires on his website, harryshearer.com.